you need to be the judge of that.
How much practice do you need? How much do you have time for, given your other courses and other responsibilities? Okay.
So I think I've got this going. Okay.
Trapezoid rule. So I can draw a picture here. Think of a example. Here's a parabola. A bit of it. If we had done, say, the midpoint rule with n equals 2, so just cut up into two things. What would this look like in terms of estimating that integral? We'd grab the height at this midpoint right here, the height at that midpoint right there, and then we'd get these two rectangles. Almost, it's just a coincidence they happen to be the same height. And there's some underestimating and some overestimating. So on the one hand, our rectangles seem to have some extra area, not under the curve. On the other hand, they seem to be missing. They seem to be missing more than they are overhanging. Right? There seems to be more missing area than there is extra area. And in fact, this is a general rule. If your function is concave up, then the midpoint rule underestimates the integral. Now, this is kind of a suggestive picture, and that's not—it's not exactly a proof. A proof would be a little bit more advanced, and that's why the book doesn't go into a proof. I could give you a proof, but there's not enough time for that, unfortunately. So, if you want to see a proof, you can ask me. I can give you a proof outside of class. But here's how I would remember it. I think kind of an extreme example where the midpoint is at the bottom of a parabola. And so you can, so that it's all missing area there. The midpoint rule misses all that stuff. Now, the trapezoid rule does things the other way. What the trapezoid rule says, let's get the area of a trapezoid. And instead of using the midpoints of these subintervals to get points on our graph, we're just going to use the places where we made cuts in the x-interval to get points on our graph. And then we're going to get the area of these trapezoids. Okay. As you can clearly see, in a concave up function, when you make just a straight line, you go above the graph. So it's clear that you're making an overestimate. So we can amend this and say, and the trapezoid rule overestimates. And you can draw another picture. And now that was the trapezoid rule do it. It would fill in. See, now it's above the bowl. So if your graph is concave up, on the interval that you're integrating over, then you could actually use both rules to get an explicit lower bound and an upper bound. So you would have not just an estimate, but you'd have an idea of how good your estimate was, because you would, if you get the two rules to give you two numbers close together, then you know a pretty good idea of where the actual value is. What if the graph was concave down? Well, if you flip everything over, then the trapezoid rule becomes an underestimate, the midpoint rule becomes an overestimate. You could draw another picture, right? Here's a downward opening parabola. Right, if I use the midpoint rule, right, I get a bunch of stuff above the curve. It's an overestimate. If I use this trapezoid, okay, here's my trapezoid, and I just connect the dots at the endpoints now. I'm missing a bunch of stuff. So it flips around. How do you tell if a function is concave up or concave down if you haven't seen the graph?
If it's negative.
If what's negative?
If it's, yeah, it's either negative or it's facing down. Concave down.
Yeah, I mean, we know what concave up and concave down looks like. But if I give you a formula, how could you test whether it's concave up or concave down?
Second derivative.
Yeah. Right. We have the second derivative test, right? In these pictures, right, second derivative is non-negative. Okay. Now, if the second derivative is some complicated formula, you may not be able to figure out whether it's positive or negative on the interval. In the worst case scenario, you know, if you can't figure anything out with the formula, you could still graph it and make an educated guess as to whether it's concave up or concave down. Okay. How do we get a formula for the trapezoid rule? So, the geometry is clear. We just we connect the dots, and we want this area. So, for example, if this is coordinate xk minus 1, this is coordinate xk, and delta x apart, then up here we have y value given by a function. Up here we have y value given by the same function but with a different input. So what's the area of that thing? Well, you may remember some formula for the area of a trapezoid. Yeah? It's base times the average height. Yeah, so the base is delta x, and then we divide by 2 and multiply by the sum of those two heights so that it's base times average height. One way you can understand this geometrically is to you look at the little change delta y here. Let's see if I can. That's better. Cut that in half. Take that triangle there of height delta y over 2, and just flip it over. Right? Now you turn it into a rectangle. And so you end up with a height halfway between these two y values. And so to get the number, so when you want something halfway between two numbers, you add the numbers and divide by two to get their average. I mean, it's just two numbers, average is the same as median. So we did this a bunch of times. We have A, for example, let's say we do N equals 3, for example. Okay, so we have an integral from A to B in X range, and we're going to cut up that range of X values into three equal parts. So each part has a width we call delta X. So it's just 1/3 of the total width B minus A. And the traditional scheme is to name these X values like this. You have X0, then X1, X2, X3. If you cut into three parts, you end up with four boundary points. So if you start, so that's why it starts at 0 instead of 1. So you end up with four of them. And this, so here's your start A. You add delta X to get X1. You add another delta X to get X2. You add a third delta X to get X3. So you can have a general formula for xk to be a plus k of those delta x's. And what's going on here? So, yeah, let's put some made-up function graph here. And so instead of figuring out what the midpoints are, we're just going to plug in the actual cut points into the function. And we're going to have to, and if n equals 3, we're going to have to do three of these trapezoids. One trapezoid there. One trapezoid there, and one trapezoid there. Okay, so three trapezoids, but we end up using four function values. Okay. So let's go over that board, write it out. So T3, this is just the book's abbreviation for the N equals 3 trapezoid rule estimate. So we have three terms. Delta X over 2 times the average of the first two function values. Right? First two Y values on our graph. So that, I guess, delta x times the 1/2 of the first two y values added together. So, this is the width, and so geometrically, this is how I think about it: width and average. Okay, and so we just do this three times. For the second trapezoid, you need the second and third y values here, which are slightly confusingly right there. Not y2 and y3, but y1 and y2. You would plug in the third and fourth function values, the y values there. they're the third and the fourth, but we started at zero, so the index is 2 and 3. Alright. And let's see. We can simplify this somewhat. There's always that delta x over 2 every time. So let's factor that out, and then we can combine like terms. You have a y0 plus 2y1s plus 2y2s. Let's say that y is equal to f of x, where the function is sine of 1 over x. And let's say that the range, the minimum and maximum x values are, say, 1 and 2. The a that I keep talking about, the minimum x value, in my notation, is 1, maximum x value is 2. This is an example where there's no formula for the integral. So we're going to approximate it crudely with just 3 trapezoids. Delta x will be 2 minus 1, the whole interval width, over 3, so just a third. So we're going to have 1/3 for the delta x. We're going to divide by 2, and then we're going to need the function values, right? So let's make a little table. Okay. So remember the formula. Okay, so the first, the left end point is just going to be the 1, right? Then we go a third to the right of that, we get 4/3. And we go a third to the right of that, and we get 5/3. And we go a third to the right of that, and we get 2. All right, we're at the other end point, we're done. Went from 1 to 2, we cut the interval from 1 to 2 into 3 equal pieces. To have 3 pieces, you need to have 4 boundary points. Y values. Sine of 1 over 1. Right, just plug it into the function. Sine of 1 over 4/3. Sine of 1 over 5/3. Last one, sine of 1/2. Okay, so we have sine of 1, sine of 3/4, sine of 3/5. You can plug these into a calculator, get some approximate values for them in here. So we're going to have 1/6 times sine of 1 plus 2 times the sine of 3/4 plus 2 times the sine of 3/5 plus. Okay. Pretty fast. That's how you streamline it. the geometry is just motivated by these trapezoids and the, after you do all this simplification, you get this kind of rule so you can speed along. Questions about how we got this formula here? So the way I remember that there's twos in there is that the interior data points, each point in the interior is influencing the height of two trapezoids. So it has a double influence on the estimate, whereas the endpoint values, they each only influence the height of one trapezoid. Estimates. Remember what I said, if it's concave up, the trapezoid rule overestimates, midpoint rule underestimates. Concave down is the other way. So we might ask, for x between 1 and 2, can we figure out if this function is concave up or concave down? Yeah, we could try. It might be, concave up in one place and concave down in one place, in which case we can't apply these directly. We'd have to break it up into subintervals. Concave down or concave up? Let's see if so the answer could be let me emphasize it could be or neither, right? It could could be concave up some places, concave up other places, right? So let's see. So,
cosine of 1 over.
Yeah. So you have to use the chain rule. Here's how I would think about it. Here you're just taking the derivative of the sine function. Here you're taking the derivative of the reciprocal function. That's the chain rule. So you have cosine of 1 over x, as you all said, and then times what? What's the derivative of the reciprocal function? Nope. All right, let's try it this way. What's the derivative of x to the power minus 1?
1 over x squared.
Negative 1 over x squared. Remember your power rule. You take the minus 1 becomes a constant multiple, and then the exponent gets decremented by 1.
Yes.
Negative 1 over x squared. So. Okay. Man. So, yeah, this is less fun now because if we differentiate again, we're going to have to use the not only the chain rule, but the product rule. Okay. Okay, so here's the product rule. Here we go. Okay, power rule on this thing again. There's a constant multiple which we pull out. So you multiply by that exponent, and then the new exponent is decremented. And, okay, now we have to use the chain rule again. So this is going to be the derivative of cosine, evaluated at the reciprocal of x, times the derivative of the reciprocal function. Yeah. This is when I'm, very tempted to have my calculator at least double-check my work to make sure I didn't make an algebra mistake. Because I know my calculator can do the symbolic derivative. I think I'll get this one right. I think I'll avoid an algebra mistake. But let me know if you catch me slipping here. Okay, 2 over x cubed cosine of x minus, let's see here. Oh, wait. But this term. Going to deal with this term. What is it? That's going to be another negative x to the minus 2, right? We did that derivative before. So you're going to have negative x to the minus 2 times negative x to the minus 2. So you're going to have plus x to the minus 4. So then, you got a minus sign there. Okay. Yeah, because the derivative of cosine becomes sine. Okay, that was a bunch of algebra. Well, let's see. You put all that together. Doesn't look fun. Yeah, you can do a few games with this. Give it a common denominator, we might get somewhere. Okay, so one big fraction over x to the fourth. Kind of a pain to actually compute these things, there's lots of nice rules about if the second derivative is only so big, you know, you can have a formula that guarantees the error is at most so bad. But for a complicated function, it can be a real pain to deal with these second derivatives. If we're really determined, you know, we can try to pull something out of this. You could factor out, say, the cosine, and so you could have something like this. Now, to pull a cosine out of a sine, well, that means you need sine divided by cosine, which is tangent. So if you really want to do a sine analysis on this thing, I'm going to boil down to this. Okay.
How did you get into x over x squared? X to the fourth half?
Well, I wanted to make all of this a common denominator. So if I multiply the top and bottom of this fraction by x, so let's see here. So I know for these numbers, I know that the tangent function is an increasing function. So you know, I can do some analysis on this, but you know, it's kind of if x is between 1 and 2, the reciprocal is between 1 and a half, and so you get the tangent of 1. The reason this works is because the reciprocal function is continuous and decreasing on this interval. The tangent function is increasing on this interval. But what is the tangent of 1 radian? Well, it's about 1.5. Okay. Now, in this case, you actually can prove that the second derivative is always positive because this term will always be between 2 and 4. This term is at most 1.5. Okay. So you can actually work it all out. You can also check that between 1.5, let's see here. So certainly, we don't have to worry about it. You have this, the fourth power thing will just be between 1 and 16. The cosine term, it'll be between 1.5, and the cosine function is decreasing on the interval. So as you can see, you've got to know a lot about these functions. Actually pull this off. It's not trivial at all. And this term here, this is a positive, right? This is the cosine of about 58 or 59 degrees. So you can, there's a lot of analysis that goes into it. So I don't recommend doing this kind of thing every day. It takes a long time. But yeah. The last stage, and then the 2x, so this term is positive, this term is positive, and then if you do all the analysis, this thing is greater than 2 minus, say, this thing, round that up to a 1.6, right? So the point is, all the terms are positives. Positive, positive, positive. So if you work really hard, you can actually prove something about this, but it's kind of painful. Sometimes it's easier because the function is easier to assign analysis on. But it can be tricky with something like the sine function because there are places where the sine function is at the top half of a wave, then it's at the bottom half of a wave. So so it is concave up. And prove it, I could have graphed it and had 99% confidence that it was concave up just from looking at the graph.
Do you ask for the proof in the exam or anything?
No, because if I ask you to prove one, it'll be an easier proof than this. I might not ask for a proof at all. Maybe
I'll let you just graph it, right? Or make your best guess.
So let's see now the. Okay, so we think that it's concave up. So we think the trapezoid rule is an overestimate. Okay, so let's look at the midpoint rule. Also n equals 3. See if we can get an underestimate. Okay. So this would just be so we have delta x, which is 1/3. And then we would have the values of the function at the midpoints. Okay. So you have to take the midpoint of 1 4/3. Which is, and there's just 3 of them, may as well draw the picture. Six, 6, 8, 6 is 7, 6, 7, 6, 9, 6, 11, 6. Okay. All right. So this is going to be
After you do the reciprocal, that's going to be 6 sevenths. This will be 6 ninths, or 2 thirds if you prefer, 6 elevenths.
So we can check. We did all this right. We should get a lower number. The actual integral lies somewhere in between. So forgive me if I scared you with this big long proof.
That was just to make sure, right? It will work.
This is how you convince somebody that the function is concave up, even if they don't trust their calculator, right? If you want to, or at a deeper level, this is how you explain. Why does it look concave up when I graph it on my calculator? Yeah. You probably trust your graphing calculator, so the real benefit of the proof is to explain why.
Right.
But there are trade-offs. I mean, if the proof is really complicated and you don't understand it, then you still don't know why. Mathematicians love it when there's a simple proof to solve something that they didn't understand before. But we still like to know why, even if the answer is complicated, as long as the question's interesting. You can be the judge of how interesting that concavity question was. All right, so estimate this integral. With the midpoint rule and the trapezoid rule, let's say n equals 5. And see if you can convince me why the midpoint rule is an underestimate, and the trapezoid rule is an overestimate. Right? So probably you want to prove it's concave up, right? This it should be much easier to prove that one's concave up. Now, the nice thing when you do these two estimates is you have an idea of how good they are, right? You know that we've narrowed things down to about 0.004, 0.005 of uncertainty about where the true value of the integral lies. So when your function is concave up or concave down, you can get this explicit sandwich of upper and lower bounds. If your function is, you know, if it oscillates, you know, sometimes it's concave up, sometimes it's concave down, then it's harder to say how good your estimate is. There are some formulas in the book about that. We'll have to talk about those another time. Okay, so this is, of course, homework 4, which is due on day 8. So today was day 4, so 4 class days from now, that would mean a week from today. This will be due with the rest of the first batch of homework. Any questions? All right. Well, contact me if you come up with a question.
Yes. Yeah, so give your best argument for why midpoint an underestimate and trapezoid is an overestimate.
Yes.
Do you mean like what you did at the beginning when you had the graph and you showed how this part was shaded?
Yeah.
Or do you want to like do it the longer way?
Well, how do you know the graph looks like? Does your graph look like a parabola opening upward or opening downward? Right? Which one? Or is it neither? Is it like downward and then upward? Right? I think the simplest thing is the second derivative test here. It's not that hard to prove that the second derivative of this thing is positive.
Okay.